We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we work and live, the Awabakal and Worimi people, and pay our respects to elders past and present. We celebrate the stories, culture, and traditions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders of all communities who also work and live on this land.
You're listening to Boob to Food, the podcast with Luca McCabe and Kate Holm. There is so much noise in the parenting space.
And we don't mean the tantruming toddler. We understand it can feel confusing, conflicting, and overwhelming.
That's why we are bringing our years of experience as a midwife, nutritionist, and naturopath.
And of course, mums.
So that you can confidently navigate the roller coaster of motherhood from boob to food and beyond.
Each week, you'll hear practical wisdom, expert advice, and inspirational stories of other mums in the depths of this parenting journey.
Let's dive in. Today's episode was brought to you by Bimbi and Roy. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Boob to Food, the podcast, and welcome back from camping, Luca. How was your trip?
Thank you. It's nice to be back. My trip was really good. Yeah, I know. We're going away again this weekend. The trip was great. We ended, I wouldn't say on a low, but it poured rain for 2 days straight. So we were kind of keen to get home after 2 days of nonstop rain. Kept trying to be the optimist. I'm like, it's clearing up, but it did not clear up. So we kids made the most of it, which was really fun. I probably got to worm them all now because they were just in in mud, in dirt, the whole entire time. And now my washing is astronomical. We had such a nice time. We were away, if you didn't listen last week, we were away for a whole 2 and a bit weeks, which was really nice. So our last week was all off grid. It was fun. It was just, we had a whole group of friends there. There was 25 kids. So,
oh my gosh,
pretty hectic. You'll have to come to the next one. Now you've got a van. Yeah, we had this one pre-booked. So, and it was busy because it was Australia Day long weekend. So it was just like a busy time, but yeah, it was really fun.
That's so good. Yep. And you've broken in the van now. You've had a few good weeks in your new caravan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so nice to like spend a long time in the van because you just, I don't know, kind of start living in it rather than a little holiday and just, I don't know, everything slows down a lot when you're actually like living in it for a few weeks rather than just a 3 day sort of trip. So yeah, it was really nice. I didn't get much sleep. Will slept in our bed every single night. Was an absolute nightmare to put to bed every single night. And so, that was a bit of a bummer because I love hanging out with my friends like once we get all the kids to bed and then we all go back outside with a cup of tea around the fire. And I missed out on most of them because Will just keeps getting out of bed and it's so annoying.
And is he still not having his day nap?
Well, some days he did. But most of the time he didn't have a day nap and it didn't seem to affect anything. keep getting out. So annoying. So like most of the time he's not falling asleep till like 9 p.m. And then he'd last like an hour and a bit in his bed and then he was in our bed all night. Anyway, we're home now and he lasted about 30 minutes in his bed last night before he was in my bed, so it's no better here.
Darling. Back in the cot or have you got your new
bed
for him?
Back in the cot, but he just climbs out. But, yeah, waiting for a new bed to arrive. But, yeah, so I don't know if I can complain about sleep deprivation to you who have a newish baby, so I will not because I used to hate when people did that.
No, it's fine. It's solidarity. I don't mind. I'm not competing. But, yeah, Emmy is 4 months old and it's so funny. I feel like I jinxed myself because in my head I was like, this is so great. Like a few people had been like, I don't know how you're doing everything that you're doing and how you're going to go back to work. And I thought to myself, well, I think it's because I'm getting pretty good sleep. Like she's been amazing overnight. And then almost like actually pretty much on the day that she turned 4 months, she rolled for the first time. She also decided to have a like 2 hour awake party in the middle of the night and has done that every night since. Mm-hmm. And what else has she done? I'm coming back to work. So my maternity leave has like officially come to an end. I won't be back to clinical work because it's just too unpredictable when I can actually work with a small human who doesn't take a bottle. But yeah, it's really changed. Oh, and the other thing that happened at 4 months is like pretty much half my head of hair has fallen out. Mm. Like in the space of 2 weeks, I think I've lost half my ponytail. It's yeah, watch this space. Hopefully in another 2 weeks' time I still have some hair on my head. At the moment it's mostly on the floor or stuck in Immy's neck folds.
I swear something happens at 4 months. So like the babies often forget how to sleep, yes, but then it's like those hormones that you were riding on for that first few months, all that happy love, oxytocin, everything's going, and then it's like, oh, I'm really tired. It's like it all just catches up with you at once.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. It's so funny. I felt like I was breezing through, and then almost exactly to the day of 4 months, I was like, oh, wait, hang on a minute. I'm actually feeling this. It's not terrible, and lucky she's really cute, and it's sort of nice like having that time with her in the middle of the night. But as it stretches on, I'm like, and she's really loud. That's the other thing. She's like happy to be awake. So she's very chatty and like exploring all of the different decibels of her voice. So it's quite loud. And so then I'm like a bit stressed trying to make sure she doesn't wake up the other two, because that would be worse. Like if they got woken up and then hopped up, then there's no getting back to sleep. But anyway, so far, touch wood, that hasn't happened. But yeah, it feels like lots of milestones and really bittersweet, because if she's the last baby, like when she rolled, I was like, oh, that's the last first roll. Like everything that comes from now, it's like, oh, it's the last time that that'll be a first. So anyway, it's still lovely and she's divine. But yes, a few extra hours of sleep wouldn't go astray.
Yeah. And it's like cruel fate that your hair falls out too at the same time.
I know. Just as I was enjoying it, it finally started to feel like it was the length, or getting closer to the length that I'd been hoping for 5 years since I had my first. And now I'm going to the hairdresser on Friday and probably going to chop it all off again.
I'm going on Friday.
This Friday?
Yes. We have the same hairdresser, everybody.
You were next Friday.
Oh, wait.
That's so funny.
No, I'm
next Friday. I think you're next Friday. Yeah. No, I thought that you were next
then.
Friday.
I was like, we're together.
We can have work meetings at the hairdresser.
Well, funny. No, I'm next Friday. It's just before my birthday, so I have fresh hair. Sorry, ignore that.
No, I knew that because my appointment was supposed to be a few weeks later, but I reached out to Annette. Hi, Annette, if you're listening, and was like, my hair's falling out. I need you to help me before Luca's birthday. And she was like, I've got Luca and a few of the other girls all in that week, so I thought something must have been happening.
Yep, fun little vineyard tour for my birthday.
Yeah, very exciting.
Nice. No. Oh, you poor thing. Well, I hope you get some sleep soon.
Yes, me too. Mm. I also probably just need to go to bed earlier, do the reverse sleep in, and yeah, hopefully, I don't know, yeah, somehow play catch up or just drink more coffee. Which is what I'm currently doing.
This is the week they start school. How are you feeling?
Oh, next week is school.
Oh, you
for
start
Jude.
Next week.
Yeah. Oh. Is Flo this week?
Well, Flynn starts this week. Flo starts on Monday. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jude's on Tuesday next week. Mm. But we are going up to the school tomorrow just to help set up and, you know, get a little bit more familiar with the classroom and the teacher. And I'm feeling mixed about that too. And I think Jude, he says that he's excited but nervous. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he goes. He's never really been in any other care away from us. And he's also, like, I think he'll feel it, but he's quite, I don't know if he'll be the one to, like, scream and let it all out at school. So I think that if there's other kids who are expressing their big emotions at drop-off, he'll probably be watching that, but I reckon he'll keep it in until he gets home. Yep. How's Flo feeling about it?
Oh, she's so excited. She's got her uniform right now, walking around the house. I'm like, keep it clean. And I was talking to her about it, and I said, oh, it's going to be so fun. You know, you're going to make so many friends. And she said, I don't want any more friends. And I was like, well, that's what the best thing about school is, you make friends. And Flynn was like, yeah, I made like 22 new friends in a year. And she said, I've already got my friends. She's got like five friends that are going from preschool to her school. I don't need any more. She's such a stubborn little thing. And I was like, that will be you. She's so stoic, and she puts on this funny noble face, and she sticks her nose up in the air, and she's like, I don't need any more friends. And I said, that will so be you. You'll get to school and be like, I don't want to talk to you because I've already got a friend.
Oh, well, at least she's feeling pretty solid then in her social group, and hopefully the transition's easy.
She's going to be queen bee. Like, You can see it already. She'll waltz into that school like.
Well, she's already done the book parade.
Yes. Oh, man. I have no worry about her, to be honest. The biggest thing for me, I think, for her will be the stamina to the last 5 days. After 3 days of preschool, she used to be pretty wrecked. Which I remember with Flynn too was pretty hard in that first year. But for him, it was COVID. So. Yeah. It was kind of a quiet year anyway. There was no activities or things that he could do. And so it wasn't too bad. Whereas I feel like with the flow, you know, life's normal and we're doing lots and we're quite busy. And so, you know, I feel like she might feel it a bit more than Flinny did. But
yeah,
we'll see. Oh, all the joys. So but sending love to anyone who is starting school because I cried every day for like 3 weeks dropping Flynn off. Oh. So I still remember it feels different with you second, I think, because school just feels so familiar and it's just like, you know, the next one going. But I just remember the first, like, so many emotions.
Yeah. It doesn't feel real for me yet. Like, I know that it's happening and I'm talking about it and, you know, doing the things to be ready, but I can't quite connect with it yet. So I don't know how I'll go.
Yeah. Oh, and it's just the monotony of the routine's the worst. Anyway, I won't scare anyone.
It's really exciting. Oh. Did you manage to finish your book while you're on holidays?
I did. For our book club, I managed to finish a book. I'm so proud of myself. It's called Tomorrow, Tomorrow and Tomorrow by, I'm trying to read the, Gabrielle Zevin. Anyway, I had really high expectations for this book because I read so many things about it and it was everyone's number one from last year. It was really good, but there was a few lull periods in the book. And so, it took me a bit to kind of, I'd get into it and then I'd get a little bit bored and then I'd get into it and then get a little bit bored. And so for that reason, I gave it an 8 out of 10 for my little rating score. However, I still think it was really good. It was like a really nice story and I think it would make an amazing movie because it was about, it was kind of about video games. It was about love, but like, you know, so I feel like if you could, I'm not a gamer, so it was kind of hard for me to picture certain things. So I feel like it would be a really cool movie. Anyway,
actually, I have a question for you about the previous book that you read, Apples Never Fall. I borrowed it from the library and I haven't started reading it yet, but Mike picked it up and read the back cover, which I didn't read anything. I just was like, oh, Lucas said this was good. So I'm such a good consumer. And he read the back and he was like, I don't know if you're going to like this. And I was like, oh, why? He's like, if this was a show on Netflix and you read what it was about, you'd say, no, that's too scary. I don't want to watch it. Is it scary?
No, it's not scary at all.
Okay.
No, you'll be all right, fine.
I'm going to read it. I get like
it's one of those ones that kind of makes you think a bit and then, no, it's not scary.
All right.
That's getting made into a series, so that'll be good.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'll read it first so then I can watch the series and not be scared.
Like it's about a missing person, but it's like it's not scary. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine.
Okay. Well, on today's episode, we are bringing back the lovely Holly Azzopardi, and this episode's a bit different from her last one. If you haven't heard that one, it was all about her breastfeeding journey and sort of traumatic first year with her little girl. But this time she's talking about the topic of people pleasing, which is something that she's written a book about. I'll let her introduce herself a little bit more, but we really hope you love this chat as much as we did.
Welcome back to the podcast, beautiful Holly. We are so excited to have you back again as a guest and talking about a very different topic this time. For those who haven't listened to your previous episode, you shared really beautifully and vulnerably about your feeding journey with your little girl. But today we have you on to talk all about people pleasing and setting boundaries as a mom and finding your voice, because this is something that you're equally passionate about. But for anyone who missed your previous episode, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and who's in your family, what you do?
Amazing. Thanks for having me back, my loves. It's so good to be back. So my name is Holly. I'm a writer/author. I'm also an intuitive reader, just to mix things up a little bit. I'm a mixed bag. I live on the Northern Rivers and I have a little girl who has just turned 2. So we're thick in the toddler stage. It's amazing. I love it. I'm obsessed. The whole different kettle of fish, that's for sure. And we have two bulldog babies as well, Lola and Archie. So it's never a dull moment in our home.
Oh, I love that you said you're obsessed with the toddler stage. Me and Kate are both like,
you know, Erin, you've done it. See, I'm like naive.
Like, oh, that's a cute little tantrum. That was.
I feel like actually when they turn two, it is kind of cute. And then all of a sudden you're like, this is not cute anymore.
The novelty wears off. Yeah.
But thankfully, I always say they're so physically cute at that age that they just get away with anything.
It's hard not to laugh a lot of the time. Like, I'm really catching myself in the moments where I'm looking at Trent and going, oh God, I shouldn't be laughing at this, but it's just so cute.
Yeah.
<It's> so
that's true.
Oh, I love it. And you said that you're an author. You've written an amazing book called The People Pleaser's Guide to Putting Yourself First. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it came about?
Yeah. So writing's always been my big thing to start with. I studied writing and comms at uni, and it's ever since I was a toddler, I was like, I'm going to write one day. It's always been my thing. So I didn't think it would be on people pleasing. I've got to say, I didn't think that would be my first topic. But a series of events led me to the point where my publisher was really interested in this topic of people pleasing. And I'd actually written an ebook maybe 7 years ago now when I first started my business and I was working in coaching. And this ebook was called The People Pleaser's Guide to Putting Yourself First. And it was absolutely not even close to the book that it is today, but it was my very sweet people-pleasing attempt at getting an ebook out into the world. And so we worked with that title and it became the book that is on the shelves today. And I'm really proud of it. It's so interesting because I received the book deal when I was pregnant with my little girl. So I received it at, I think I must have just been in my second trimester. And so I spent 2 months of the second trimester writing the book. And then there was a year of editing and design, and that was the year when my little girl was born and her first year in life. And so it's been this interesting piece where I wrote the book pregnant but not yet a mother and edited the book as a first-time mother to a newborn, and having to resit what I had written in my maidenhood and then take on my teachings as a mother. It was quite jarring, to be honest. And I really did have to practice what I've preached all over again in this new context of motherhood, because when I wrote it, I was pregnant, but I'd never mothered before.
Yeah.
I love that.
And so what is people-pleasing? We were just talking off air quickly because I was like, I don't think I'm a people-pleaser, and I think Kate is, but what would you define as people-pleasing?
My definition of people-pleasing is when you're choosing other people's wants or needs ahead of your own to your own detriment. So there are going to be instances in life, especially in motherhood, where we do need to choose the wants and our needs of our babies before our own. That's a given. It's when it comes at a cost to your own mental health, physical well-being, emotional well-being. You know, the word martyrdom gets thrown around a lot when we're really self-sacrificing to a detriment, to a decline. That's the people pleasing that I talk about. That's the people pleasing that I reference in the book. And that's the people pleasing that, like Kate, I have experience with. Yeah.
So how did you realize that you were a people pleaser though? Like, did something happen where you thought, oh my gosh, I can't keep doing this, or?
Yeah. It was actually the first time I ever experienced any form of burnout. So it was I coined it in the book as my rock bottom. But it was a complete and utter adrenal burnout, mental health decline. And it was when I was working corporate. And for maybe 4 years or 3 years into that 5-year role, I knew that I didn't want to work that job. I knew, I hated it. I cried every day on the commute to and from. It was never on my, you know, vision board of things I wanted to do when I grew up at all. I had become really stuck in this monotonous, I guess it's kind of a societal conditioning of like, you get the job, you work the job, you make the money, you go home and you do it all over again. And that became a real challenge in my life. It consumed every other area of my life. And yet I still was too afraid to leave because I was so worried about what other people would think of me. And, you know, what would my boss say? What would my team say? What would my clients do without me? What would Trent, my partner, say when I, you know, decided to leave a job and then didn't have anything else lined up? So I noticed when I had this flatline experience in my health, I knew it was connected to this indecision or this stuckness I was feeling. And I started to look around, and every decision I was making in my life was based on what other people either wanted from me or what I perceived they wanted from me. So they, you know, likely my boss or my team at the time wanted me to be healthy and happy. And I was making up the story that they would hate me if I left, for instance. So yeah, it was that first rock bottom where my health gave way in all fronts that made me have a look at every decision I was making in my life and how I was living it for other people.
Mm. And Kate, do you know that you're a people pleaser, or only if people tell you?
I totally know that I'm a people pleaser. No, I have known this for a long time. And I was just saying to Holly offline, sometimes I wonder, like, do I actually enjoy being really nice to people, or am I just like paralyzingly terrified of being disliked or, you know, upsetting someone? It's actually now, like, I think it's been a trait for me, a forever trait, that I can't separate. I'm like, I mean, I obviously like to be nice to people and do nice things, and it brings me joy to, you know, see other people happy. And at the same time, I know that there's been so many boundaries of mine that have been crossed, and similar experiences to Holly's where every part of my person is saying, no, like, I don't want to go to that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to, I don't know, whatever it might be for somebody else. But I still am like, okay. Like, and I catch myself, I can hear it, and I'm like, damn it, why did you say that? Like, it's, yeah, I definitely know that I'm a people pleaser. And I also have found that, and I don't know if it's been the same for you, Holly, but becoming a mum has helped me to refine it a little bit. I would certainly not say it's like something that's fully gone. It's definitely not. But having a voice for my children feels easier than having a voice for myself. Still not like always easy, but definitely I've been able to put some firmer boundaries in place, and just I care way more about my kids than I do about what other people think of me and my decisions. So that's probably, like Holly said, been a bit jarring as well, like actually seeing that and realizing how much of my life has been lived for other people or the perceived desires of other people as well.
Yeah. I had the same experience, Kate, when I stepped into motherhood. I have instated some boundaries in my life I never ever thought I would have before motherhood. Like, I had a friendship. I've gone without contact with a parent, and I never, ever thought these things would happen before motherhood. And it's because of my little girl and that, I guess, that fire they ignite in you, right? Mm. Where it's not even about me, it's about them. But I just wanted to pick up on something you were mentioning, Kate, this niceness around, you know, I like to be nice and I like to be kind and I like to be these things. And that is a big deconditioning piece I had to really process around, like, you can still be those things and not people please. Mm. You can still be nice and kind and giving and generous to a point where it doesn't create resentment or bitterness, frustration in the giving. And that's something I needed to really catch myself with, because I definitely identified with being, you know, the nice one, the kind one. I was walking around with this bubbling resentment or frustration or bitterness. You know, I did this for that person and they didn't do this back for me, or whatever the thing is. And it's no fault but our own because of how we've defined being nice or kind is. It's like a complete reevaluation of, you can do those things, but if it's still at a cost to you, then it's actually, you're not being nice firstly to yourself and to the other person, because there's this underlying sense of expectation or something else, if that makes sense.
Mm. You feel like, Kate, that you... when you're being like nice, do you feel like it's fake? Because that's the thing that I find, like, that jarring. I don't know. I'm like, I couldn't be fake to somebody. It's not so much that it's a detriment to me, but I want to be nice to people. But then I think, well, I don't know, if you're not being nice to me, or if you're, I don't know, asking me to do something, I think, oh, well, I wouldn't just want to be nice for the sake of being nice. But then I think, is that coming down to being a fake person?
I mean, I wouldn't think that I'm a fake person.
I guess you're fake either, but I mean, like, in certain situations, you know, with a random stranger or like something
like that. Yes, when I want to say no. I don't know. I guess I don't know. The detriment to myself would come in the aftermath. So, like, for example, I don't know, like, I used to be, I'm talking pre-motherhood, like, the person who, if someone needed, like, help with something, I'd be always saying yes. And so then what it meant, and, like, I would genuinely want to be helping. And at the same time, it'd mean that I've said yes, not just to one person, but to 10 people. And so then all my time is taken up. It means I'm sleeping less. I'm feeling like I'm, you know, stretched really thin and stressed. Or actually a big example that I've laughed about so many times with Mike, which is just like, it's so ridiculous now. But back in the day when I used to go out to nightclubs and whatever, I would always be like, if people would be like, oh, would you like a drink? I'd be like, oh no, that's okay. I'll get it. And then I'd be like, what do you want? And then I'd end up buying round after round after round of drinks for other people when I couldn't afford it. I'd be putting it on my credit card. It's unbelievable. Like, if someone ever bought me a drink, I'd think like, well, what's the like least expensive thing that I could buy? But other people are like, oh, I'll have a double vodka Red Bull or like an espresso martini. And so I'm just like, okay. And I would just say yes. And I would buy the drink and then like not actually be able to afford it and be feeling really stressed on the inside. Not because I don't actually want to buy someone a drink, but because I didn't have the voice to be like, oh, I'm happy to buy you a drink, but I can't afford that one or something like that. So I don't know if that's fake or like, I just felt scared, to be honest, like scared that if I said like, oh, I can't afford that, or yes, I'd love for you to buy me a drink, like that I'd be judged, or like I just felt embarrassed. And yeah, it's more that kind of vibe.
That's what this is. It's managing other people's perspectives of us. And he, honestly, majority, I speak to a lot of people places now, and majority of people who are doing the work to get to the underlying roots, so much of it is a fear of judgment and if what other people might think. But Luca, you give a really good, it's just a really good talking point, because the thing is, what other people might think is, well, you're being fake. That's actually the truth of it. And there's been a lot of talk in personal development stories where people pleasing is actually manipulation, because you're manipulating the way that someone else perceives you because to be liked by them. It's not in a way of like malice or, you know, ill intent. The intent is pure-hearted. It's like, I just want you to like me. But underneath it all, there is a level of manipulation of, I don't want you to judge me, so I'm just going to do or say whatever I think you want me to, versus what actually feels true.
You just articulated it way better than me, but yes, that was what I was coming. That was my point, but I couldn't quite word how I wanted to say it.
Yeah, it's really jarring. I mentioned it in the book, this manipulation thread, because it's not intended that way, but it can come across that way, especially to someone like Luca, where we have this chat just on the podcast. And she's like, can't relate, not a people pleaser. And so this overly nice energy, or this overly, like, you can read someone's intent behind things a lot of the time, whether they're saying a yes or no, you can feel whether it's actually at a cost to them or not. So if you feel someone constantly being a yes person at their own detriment, before long you are going to feel, oh, this person doesn't actually mean it or doesn't actually want to, or there is a level of a piece of them that I can't trust, or a fakeness happening. Yeah, I totally understand that.
Yeah, it's like you can't get to that real sort of part behind them. Like that real friendship sometimes, because you just think, well, whatever I say, they're just going to agree with, or they're going to say yes to. And it's like, no, I actually want you to have an opinion on something as well.
Exactly.
Oh, no. Is that like, the people pleaser in me, Luca, is like, oh no, now Luca feels like she can't connect with me because she thinks I'm being fake. Like,
I don't think
this is literally
you.
The voice.
But I don't think you're like that with me, Kate, because we're close, but I feel like you potentially would be like that with like other people. Not close friends. I mean, like, other people in your circle, you know, or outer circle, I would say.
Yeah, probably.
But then I get called a robot, so I don't know what's better. My family, that's the nickname for me. It's the worst, robot, because they say I don't feel any emotion, which I do. I just am very good at internalizing the emotion and, sort of working with it that way. So it's not that
there's a level of pragmatism as opposed to having it consuming.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'll just think about things quite literally and work out things and be pragmatic about things rather than be emotional about things. And so then that, I think that tends to come into that people pleasing, because it's like I'll think about things and think, no, well, that, you know, this isn't going to work for this reason, and it's not me being mean. I'll just say, oh, you know, this is exactly why. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you think about that, Holly. You might just think I'm a robot too, but
no.
No, I think I surround myself with Lucas. Like, all of my best friends are the same, because I need that energy reflected back to me that it's safe and it's okay to actually make my needs and my boundaries clear, and people aren't going to hate me for it, and people love me, and it's still going to be okay. I think where this actually comes from is this mass societal conditioning around being the good girl, and I use inverted commas for that. You can insert whatever, like the good mother or the good friend. Yeah. Would insting here. And the more that you have connected to that identity factor, you know, be it maybe you were the high achiever in school, and so you always got the best marks, and that's how you defined your sense of worth. Or be it that you were, like Kate's example, I'm always the kind one, or I'm always generous and willing to help. You know, if that's something that you have overly identified with, then it will eventually come at a cost to no longer choosing other people and actually choosing you first, because the opposite of good is bad. Mm. And how many walk around and go, I want to be mean, or I want to be bad. Like, it's just not the case. So we see things in these absolutes rather than the nuance and the shades of gray that move between the spectrum of good, being the good girl, or being the, like, the rebel or the robot. It's like, how can we actually break up with those definitions and also catch ourselves in, you know, this is looking at your childhood. This is looking at, you know, the way that your parents or your caretakers were mirroring, inverted commas, what you did as a good, you know, good behaviors that were overriding your own boundaries. An example I use in the book is, and I think we can all experience, we've all experienced this in some way, when you're going to a family Christmas or something, and your parents are like, go and give that relative a hug, or go and give that relative a kiss on the cheek, and you don't want to, and everything in your body is saying, but I don't want to. And if you were to say that, more often than not, especially in our childhoods, it was, well, be a good girl and go do that. Like, that's just what you do if you're being good, right? And so depending on your upbringing and the labels or the names you were called or the punishments you received for not being, inverted commas, good, that's going to also come at a cost to how safe you feel to actually put your needs before other people. Because like you said, Kate, there's a level of fear, and that's because you don't feel safe in actually choosing you. So it would be about getting to the root of why that is. Like, what are the moments in your upbringing, or in my case, in my upbringing, when I was told I was wrong for not doing the thing that was perceived as good? Does that make sense?
Do you feel like it also comes down to, like, a lack of self-confidence as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's when the book starts with talking about self-worth and really becoming aware of the things that you do in your life that bring you that sense of confidence and worth. And if you don't have, you know, positive self-talk or any sort of mechanisms or coping mechanisms that can build that sense of worth or confidence in self, validation, et cetera, then you are going to be kind of butting up against a brick wall, because until you're able to stand and assert yourself and know what you stand for, and then articulate that openly, you're just going to continue running a loop and not getting anywhere. It's why it's literally the first chapter in the book, because before you get to boundaries, which boundaries is the last chapter in the book, because that's the hardest stuff. We don't go straight to the heavy lifting. We've got to look at the micro changes we can make, and developing confidence in self and a strong and healthy sense of worth is the first step, in my opinion.
We'll be back after this short break. Today's episode was brought to you by Bimbi and Roy,
I absolutely love this brand. I discovered them not long after having Jude and have been basically living in them ever since. They have so many gorgeous prints. They're really comfortable to wear. They're really versatile and they're also very easy to breastfeed in. They also double as swimwear, so I found them perfect to labor in for both of my water births with the girls.
Bimbi and Roy are designed in Australia and ethically crafted in Fiji in the first solar powered facility in the region. The cotton Bimbis, which is the one that I have, are made from organic cotton and they are sustainably dyed here in Australia.
Yeah, I absolutely love them. I probably have about 10 of the bralettes and some of the undies at home too. You can check them out for yourself and grab a welcome discount code by visiting bimbiandroy.com.au. Now let's get back to today's episode.
Yeah. I didn't expect to feel so emotional in this episode. I feel like I can barely get a question out because it's like... is so raw for me, like hearing you say all of that. I know that for me, a lot of it does come down to just that total lack of self-worth. And I think where I've been able to find that is in becoming a mother. Like I feel like I do a really good job as a mum.
You do.
And so it's, thank you. it's easier, not easy, but easier to find a voice and to, like, that was like the first time that I set a boundary was something around my son when I was pregnant with Bowie. And yeah, some behavior. And it also led then to the breakdown of a relationship with my parents. And I just think at the same time as it's like heartbreaking and a lot to process, it's like, well, no, I have boundaries. They are okay to have. They're certainly not unreasonable. And treat me how you've treated me for, you know, ever. But I absolutely will not tolerate that for my children. And it's like slowly with that tiny bit of confidence and like almost practice, like practicing setting a boundary and practicing speaking up. It's slowly, slowly, slowly getting a touch easier, but not in every aspect of life. Like, yeah, there's still so much to unpack, but I'm not going to make everybody listen to a therapy session for me on the podcast. Maybe over time.
Oh, my love. The emotion is so, it's so real. And this is the confronting nature of this work. Mm-hmm. If this has been such a big piece that's run every decision in your life for 30 plus years, the job you are working or aren't working, the way that you show up as a mother, the way you show up in your relationships with friends or your partner or whatever it is, then actually having a look at why is the piece that most often we avoid because of the pain that can sit there. And it can feel really heavy and dense. And yet, depending on where you sit on the people-pleasing spectrum, but you're just so brave, Kate. Yeah. Like, that you've made, and you are such a good mum.
Oh, thank you.
Doing this work is brave. Mm. Like, looking, it's so funny because the book itself is like this bright, like orange pink cover. Like, it's really, it looks like really light and gifty. And then I'm telling you the amount of people that would have opened it and gone, this is confronting.
Yeah.
Like, definitely don't judge a book by its cover because it's emotional work. Mm. Yeah.
And where have you seen, like, either for yourself or just in general, like that people pleasing showing up in motherhood more specifically?
Yeah, I'm because I wrote the book, it was like my prep work for motherhood without realizing. So I've become pretty good, like kind of, I'm not going to call us robots, Luca, but I'm definitely a reformed people pleaser. So in motherhood, I'm pretty, like, this is when I ended the friendship, went no contact with a parent, like, and just without any question, there's still emotion around it. Mm. Of course, there's still like the grief that comes with that and the heavy lifting of, you know, should I be doing this? Should I be cutting this person out of my life or whatever the decision is? Mm. However, for me personally in motherhood, I've become much better, but some things that I'm seeing and that I have seen are, when we outsource our own innate knowing or intuition to the multitude of advice that is external. Mm. And I mean, just a common one we see is sleep with babies, you know, co-sleep versus whatever other options there are. We're co-sleeping, so I don't really know. No, it's those sorts of polarizing topics that have quite emotional charge around them in motherhood. Mm. that can really be jarring for someone who identifies as a people pleaser. Because if, for instance, you were really feeling to co-sleep with your baby and you had the grandparents on both sides saying that that's ridiculous for XYZ reason, it would be much more difficult for you to hold your own in that decision in what feels true for you versus the external noise and opinion of others. So, and you can insert anything into that example. You know, in motherhood, there's just every single minute is a decision. So when you're immobilized by people pleasing, it's a real disconnect from your own intuitive knowing and trusting in your intuition. And we could look at it with feeding, like baby-led weaning versus whatever other options again.
That's so funny.
Or the other episode that I was on where it's like breastfeeding versus the need to formula feed. But, oh, my God, for me in that moment, what was everyone going to think? Knowing that the reality is people are going to think things. There are going to be judgments. It's apparent that not everyone agrees with that decision that I made. But whatever the decisions are, this is where it comes right back to what Luca was saying around developing confidence in self. And then, Kate, what you mentioned there as well, the practice in asserting a boundary and then realizing, oh, that was stretchy for me, but I'm safe and I actually feel a bit relieved for choosing me and so I can go again. That they've been the two biggest things for me in motherhood where, yeah, making those calls and those decisions for my little girl have felt less emotional charge around them because I've realized that I'm safe in making those decisions, that the people who love me are not going to judge me. Then they're not going to judge me. Or if they are, they're going to do it in a way that's really still beautiful and supportive of my decision. What you realize is eventually you're surrounded by a community of people who really care about you. And then it's even safer and less charged to choose yourself. And that's the position I'm in now where I don't have a single friend or a single person in my life where I have to second guess when I'm choosing myself or making a decision for me, because I've kind of done that. It's almost like a over time, it's like leaves falling away on a tree, right? And then you're left with whatever's fresh there. That's how it feels for me right now. So, yeah, in motherhood, it plays out even in pregnancy, in birth. Do I home birth? Do I birth in a hospital? That was a huge one for me as I was writing this book. My fear around openly sharing with my loved ones that I was aiming for a home birth, there was an element of fear in that for me, because what are other people going to think? Maybe I should just go and have the hospital on standby just in case, you know, X, Y, Z. So I think it starts as soon as we conceive, and it's something that we carry with us through pregnancy and beyond. And so especially for women who overly identify with this people-pleasing archetype as mothers, this is some of the best work you can do, because not only is it for yourself and your own worth and your own confidence and the own quality of life you're creating, but also what you're mirroring for your children. It's actually, and this is what I always come back to, this has actually been the prompt for me in the big boundaries I've set, is my little girl's watching me and I do not want her to behave in any other way than the way I'm about to. So, yeah, if you can't do it for you, do it for them.
Yeah, totally. And this is part of the reason why I am, as much as like I've mentioned on previous episodes, like some of Bowie's whopping tantrums, they're not like, I don't go, yay, we're here having another tantrum. It's like certainly not fun. But at the same time, I'm like, it is so important that she knows that her voice is like, everything that she's feeling is valid and I want to hear her. And even if it's really loud and it's in the middle of the shopping center and it's not ideal timing for me, it's also like, I want her to feel like she can fully express herself, state her needs. Doesn't mean that I can always, you know, pander to them, but that she's important and that her voice is important and her wants and desires and boundaries are important too, which I think it is such a big shift with looking at our kids as like having their own, I don't know, well, maybe it's not, but from my experience, and like you said earlier, I think the generation that we were in, it was like, well, you do this, you say this, you hug that person, you know, this is you being a good girl or good boy. And now it's like, no, we see our children need to be respected as their own individual self as well. And we're there to guide them and we're there to help them. But
it's, yeah, I think it's just so important. But then the people pleasing part of me is like, I can see this slippery slope for myself where I then want to please my children all the time. And not that I don't, like, you know, if they're sad, I can understand that they're sad, but I definitely feel sometimes like, because I have thought about this so much, I probably get stuck in overthinking and then like overdoing it with trying to make sure that their emotional world is okay.
Mm. Well, they're allowed to see you get it wrong as well. Like that's important for them, you know, and for them to, I always come back to my own childhood and go, I mean, for everything that was messed up, I turned out okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, I think the thing to come back to in that situation is anytime it feels to a cost of your own well-being, like immensely, mm-hmm. where you are overthinking and it maybe is lending itself to anxiety, mm-hmm. that's where it's like, okay, we need to rein this in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the other piece to kind of build on what you're talking to, Kate, and it is this good girl, good boy conversation. You look societally around the narrative we hear, especially with women who take up space, who are have an opinion, who say something against the mainstream. I mean, Luca, you're a prime example of this, to be honest, is like people come at you, right? And people say, don't say that. You are wrong. Be quiet. Mm. And that's what this is. And it's actually like, I know, Luca, you're able to hold that. But for most, I'm talking about women specifically here. For most women, that is terrifying, mm-hmm. and they will not put themselves in spaces where they would be on the receiving end of that. And it's because of the society, what we see outside. Like there would be so many people in this community that witness the polarizing conversations that can happen and go in their head, I'm not going to speak up about this thing in my personal life because there are these sorts of people out here, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be under attack. Mm-hmm. And so really is also this piece that we're looking outside in, like what the media picks up and spins, where, you know, women who take up space, it's I'm a Swiftie. So it's like the constant chat with Taylor Swift, like she's annoying, she's obnoxious, she's taking up too much space. But what? It's when we do that, we are running the risk of being criticized and judged, and we see it exaggerated on these public platforms, which is why it often feels much bigger than it actually is.
Yeah. We do get a lot of, not so much anymore. Did used to get a lot of backlash, but then I don't know why. I think there's a few reasons it doesn't affect me. One is that I feel very confident in what we put out into the world. And so I'm like, no, well, I can back this 100%. And so I don't, that's just your opinion. And that's the thing with things like research. I'm like, you can find research about anything. So, you know, yes, you might have a research about something, but I also do. And it's kind of one of those funny things that it ends up coming down to an opinion and what you want to research a lot of the time. But then I think too, we get so much positivity, way more than negativity, like 99% positivity to that 1% negativity. And I just, except for on TikTok, TikTok is a very weird platform. It's very odd. I think like I get these weird comments and I just think, who are all these people? Like they don't follow. It's a very strange world over there.
I'm so glad I don't have the TikTok.
You would hate TikTok, Kate.
I would have resigned and go and buried myself in a hole.
TikTok is funny, and it makes me worried for like the younger generation because they're all on TikTok. Yes. And I think people are harsh on there because it's Instagram's more like that community. You follow people, you follow their journey, you kind of know where their heart is, everything. TikTok, you're just mindlessly going through different videos and you'll be like, I don't agree with that. And so you'll say something, but you wouldn't have a clue who I am, what we do, anything. It's such a random, bizarre thing. But anyway, going back to, I think that for a lot of women though, I think that people-pleasing does come out in motherhood because there's so much of that lack of confidence when you become a mother. It's so new. Everything is so new and no one knows what they're doing. Like we are trying to go by intuition, but then there's all these voices and people that tell you different things, you know, like you were saying that sleep training is better. No, co-sleeping is better. And you're like, I don't know what one to do. And it's hard to trust your intuition if you don't have that confidence or a really good group of people around you who, like you said, will just support whatever you decide to do. And I feel like we get a lot of those comments here at Boop to Food about, you know, boundaries with grandparents. And that's a big one for a lot of people, and especially around food, because, you know, we often, I mean, there's nothing wrong with spoon feeding, but baby-led weaning has so many advantages, and it is just sort of one of those things that is kind of overtaking spoon feeding in a lot of ways. And, you know, the research is showing that the earlier we can baby-led wean, like there's a lot of positives to that. But that's so different to how like our parents fed. And so then they'll look after the children and just be, you know, basically reprimanding you from what you're doing and what you've learned. And then people don't have that language or knowledge behind it to know what to say to fight back. And so what would you say for those people who maybe just have a gut instinct about something, or, you know, just feel like really convicted to do something but don't particularly know like the ins and outs and the whys, but how would you tell them, like, would you have a script or something for them to be able to hold a boundary, you know, without knowing that stuff, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And it's this is one of the harder ones, because there are incremental little micro boundaries you can make, like an out of office on your email, for example, that are really easy, like baby steps into boundary land. But what you're speaking about here is a really hard one, because most people pleasers are also incredible conflict avoiders. So any potential of conflict, we sniff it out and we go, not touching that. I don't want to look at that. I'm just going to look this way. And so when it's your child and you're making a decision for their well-being and you feel really strongly about something and then you have that pushback, the only way through it is through healthy conflict. And
I've got goosebumps all over.
Such an unfortunate part, because it's like, okay, just give me the magic pill. The magic pill is doing the thing you're resisting, which is having a conversation that can still be kind, but very clearly. And this is honestly the biggest helper for you in these situations is honesty and being kind in that expression, but saying, in this example, we're doing baby-led weaning. I would really appreciate it if we don't spoon feed baby. I totally understand where you're coming from. However, we're doing baby-led weaning. That's it. Take the emotion out of it. You just want to state the facts for what they are. You can still reflect back that other person's experience, see where you're coming from. I hear you, absolutely. And we're doing this. Now, what we want to catch ourselves in is apologizing, because this is what people pleasers will do. Like, oh, and I'm so, so sorry, like, but I'm going to do this, but sorry. No, no, no. Like, obviously be gentle with yourself. And the first few times you will likely feel a level of guilt and shame, because at some point along the way, you have been made to feel guilt or shame for choosing you. So notice those emotions as they arise. And in the book, there are some really beautiful practices to kind of turn down the dial on those emotions, should they, which if you've been people pleasing for a long time, then in a kind of conflict, they will come up. But this is one of those things where over time, practice gets you stronger and it becomes less charged. If emotion comes up the first few times where you're asserting a boundary and you're stating clearly what it is, let it come up. And you don't need to apologize for that either, but you might explain, you know, this has been a really difficult decision for me to make, as you can see by my emotion, but I'm standing by it because it feels like the right one for me and baby, and I trust that you'll respect that. Now, then it's up to you. If someone continues to overstep, because you've made it really clear, right, that this is what it is, there's no gray area, it's this and that's it. But if, say, you show up and they've been spoon-fed in this particular instance, that's where you say, look, I noticed that this has happened. I've asked you to not do that. If you continue to do that, I'm going to have to, you know, what would I say? If this continues to happen, we're not going to be able to have visits where food or meal times are unattended. As an example, this is where the boundary would have to get firmer, because we train people how to be with us. But the biggest helper for you in this example is making it really clear, like no gray matter. Because then if someone chooses to continue to overstep, that's where you can really enforce more solid boundaries. So an example for me, in my book, I share that the family member I've now gone no contact with, at the time of writing the book, it was more I was faced with aggression in conversations. So that could have been name-calling, yelling, swearing. And for a long time I accepted that because I could see why they were the way they were. I knew they didn't mean it, you know, making all the excuses for the other person, even though at the end of it all, it was making me feel horrific. And so the first boundary that I stated with this person with quivering voice, might I add, I was terrified to do it, but I knew I had to, was if you continue to call me and speak in this way, I will be ending the conversation. And they continued and I had to follow through. Mm-hmm. You always follow through with your boundary. It's not just lip service. You've got to back it up. So I ended the conversation and then they continued in other means, text, block the number. It's that crystal clear. We get scared to do the thing of, you know, the boundary assertion because, oh God, I'm going to be stepping into some form of conflict. But just an extreme example then, for the most part, people are going to hear you and they're going to go, oh, okay, yeah, all good, no worries. And then they're going to probably go through their own processing around what they've made it mean about them. That's actually not your business. Your business is asserting what's true for you.
It comes down to, though, like anything in parenting, doesn't it, is sticking to your boundary. You know, with toddlers and these tantrums or anything. I remember my husband's nan who recently passed, she was 93. Her like bit of advice to me when I had Flynn, who's nearly 9, was stick to your word. Like if you say something, make sure you mean it. And I've always held that really like tightly. And
I have too, Luca, since you shared it with me. I'm like, it's such a good piece of advice. So
good old, we called her Coogee Babe. That was her Instagram name. Good old Coogee Babe. But it's so true. Like, you know, I often will overhear people and I know that they have well intentions when their toddler's having a tantrum or something's happening and they'll say, you know, if you keep doing that, we're going to go home, but then they never go home and it just keeps happening. And I think I would never threaten to go home because that's the I don't want to go home myself. Like that's not optional for me. For you. So I'm never going to say that unless I actually am ready to go home, then maybe that would be a good one. So I have to come up with other creative things, you know, if they continue to tantrum, that's not about going home because I think, well, no, because I can't follow through with that. And I think since then I've tried to apply that with everything in my life too. Like if I say something, like I mentioned on our Frequently Asked Questions podcast, I think like or maybe it was the post that we did, like my pet peeve is flaky people, like people who say something and say they're going to be there or do something and then they don't. And I just think like, to me, that's just the worst characteristic. And so I'm like, I just have applied that through everything in my life, but I'm guessing that's probably why I'm good at setting boundaries because it's the same thing. Like if I say something, I mean it and I just stay true to my word. And I'm like, I don't see that as being mean because I still think, you know, I still think I'm a good friend. I have good people around me and everything, but that's like, well, no, if I say this and that's what I mean, and then at least they can trust me and know that I'm going to come through, I guess.
I was about to say, Luca, like it actually means more people are likely to trust you because they know your word. I had this similar experience with a friend who I am queen of screening phone calls. I hate phone calls. I just don't like
worst.
Don't call me. Like text me or send me a voice note, but don't even voice note me, just text me. I'll voice note you back.
No. Yeah, but voice notes now, they like make it a text. It's great. Because Kate listens to me really long ones and I just read them. I don't listen. I just read them now. I'm like, yep, done.
Yes, noted. But I have a friend who says, like, I always feel really good when you answer my call because I know that you want to be there and you're going to be fully present rather than me. And screening calls is actually a really great practice of boundary setting because in this hyper-vigilant state, especially where we're all hyper-available right now and everyone expects us to be on our phones and in our DMs at all times, it's a really good practice to, you know, see someone calling you and go, do I actually feel like I'm going to give this person the presence that they need in whatever conversation this is, or do I feel like I'm just not vibing this right now? And then screening it and sending a message and saying, I'll get back to you at this time or I'm in the middle of something or whatever it is. So my friends know now not to call me firstly, but also we'll schedule a call in, right? Or they'll send me a text instead and they know that when they do get me on the phone, I'm 100% theirs and I'm 100% present rather than this obligatory, oh God, okay, I'm just going to pick this up. I'll just text where you're never fully present or with a person and they can feel that on the receiving end too. Mm.
Do you have any like top tips then to leave everyone with for people pleasers? Is there anything that you think we haven't covered that you'd want anyone to know?
We've covered a lot of ground. What I would say is just in the example that Kate shared where her emotion came up, trust that this is a lifetime process. It's not something where you go out, you buy the book, you do the activities in the book, and then you're cured of people pleasing. Absolutely not. This plays out in and will play out in our lives for however long, you know, we're around, because we are so deeply conditioned to be liked and accepted by people. And so be gentle with yourself. Like, take it really, really slowly. This isn't about you going out off the back of this podcast and like, I'm going to settle these down. I'm going to have these challenging conversations.
You know that there's no risk of that to anyone who's a people pleaser. They're like, no, terrifying. Not gonna
just do enough where you don't feel unsafe, but it feels just that little bit of butterflies in the stomach, you know? And it could come back to Luca's point of, maybe we start with working on your self-worth. Mm. Maybe that's the starting point for you. Or maybe in the book we look a lot at getting clear on your values, because your values play out in, you know, your relationships with people and these sorts of things. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's just getting clear on what brings you joy and bringing more joy into your life. Like, this work can be really light. It doesn't have to go straight into the heavy lifting. So take it step by step. Don't override your nervous system, because what you're going to end up doing is tell yourself that this is way too scary and way too hard and you're not going to look at it at all. So very, very slowly.
Do you think it's good to surround yourself then with like, yeah, people that are more pragmatic to strengthen that muscle? Yes. Because in a funny way, yes, Kate, I feel like you have gotten a lot less people pleasing in the the years that I've known you. Yeah, definitely. From when like we
maybe
I'm rubbing off on you. And then alternatively, I'm like, I feel like I need people like Kate in my life to soften me, because, you know, someone who's not people pleasing, I guess, can go a little bit robotic. And, you know, so it's like you kind of need each other, I feel like, to balance each other. When I reflect on my friend group, I've got a sort of mix of both, and I think it's nice because we all kind of then yin and yang each other out, I guess. Do you think that's important to find?
Absolutely. Like I was saying, I look around at I've got a probably like a 70-30 split, because Kate's in my intimate circle. Yeah. So I've definitely got the flavors of like that I would feel more resonant with, especially before I wrote the book. But it's in my life, majority of the women are so assertive and so like choosing of themselves. And for me, it mirrors how safe it is to do that, and how you're still like so loved in that, and how you still like, my friends are so generous and kind, and just they're the best people in the world. And yet they choose themselves more than I ever have, especially in the past. So it is a beautiful mirroring of how you can be a certain way and it be okay and it be safe and you loved and accepted for
that. I think I also know that because I've definitely got a mixed bag as well, but there's certain friends, like if I need to advice on certain topics, I'm like, okay, well, these are my like really honest friends. So these are the people that I'll call when I want someone to be like, what? Why would you do that? No, just say this. Or like, yeah, you're in that group. But then also, you know, there's a lot of people who are very similar. And I also find there's comfort in that too, in that like we have a shared experience of like, yeah, I know I tried to do that and that was really hard and scary. So there's a place for people pleasers and non-people pleasers. But I guess like at the end of the day, we want everyone to feel well and happy and balanced and like they're, yeah, aligned with their values and getting their needs met and like just those fundamental things that I think we need as humans.
Absolutely. Able to choose yourself without fear of any repercussion that might come from
and that. And I can imagine too, a big thing would be finding friends that don't take you for a ride and don't, because I've seen this in my periphery with other friends who take advantage of other people, not in my particular friend group, but you know, school friends and things like that, who I've seen, you know, there'll be someone that's so lovely and a people pleaser and just wants to do everything to help people, but then they get taken for a ride and end up doing everything for everybody. And I just think like, to me, that's more of a reflection on the people who are using them. And I just think, I'm guessing they're the type of people, Holly, that you were saying are good to cut out of your life if you can, or set very strong boundaries around.
Yeah, and they're the people that you will likely set a boundary and they'll push back, and then you'll set another one and there'll be more pushback. Mm. And the thing I'll say about that, as someone who, I'm telling you, but like 3 years ago before I wrote this book, if you told me I was going to end a friendship and contact with a family member, I just would not have believed you. Mm. So this has been years and years of work to get to this point. But what I've found on the other side of that is actually so much freedom and liberation. And it actually feels good. And I was so scared. And I just feel like it's important to share that the fear isn't real. And what's on the other side of it is actually a big exhale in both for me. And yeah, these people were very enmeshed in my life and very much taking advantage. And also I allowed it. Yeah. So I need to have the role that I played. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so this is why these changes have had to be made, but I feel so much better for it on the other side.
What's that Dr. Seuss? I think it's Dr. Seuss quote. Those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. I think that's a good thing to lock in there, that yeah, when you state your truth and like, yeah, your needs, the people who are important and who really care about you are going to be there to support you. And if not, then perhaps reassess. No, you know, it doesn't have to be like cut a relationship out completely, but it also can be. But also maybe, you know, people can move further out of the circle and not have such a big impact on your life every day.
Absolutely.
Mm. Oh, thank you, beautiful Holly. Such a pleasure to talk to you always. And yeah, I know for me this has been a very insightful and obviously emotional conversation. Definitely more work to do, but I hope that it's been helpful for others, and we'll make sure that we link where to find you and your incredible book, which I have read cover to cover and probably need to give another read. But thank you so much for sharing with us and for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, my loves. It's been beautiful, and yeah, love having chats with you guys.
Thank you for listening to Boob to Food, the podcast. We hope this episode made you feel inspired, confident, and less overwhelmed in your parenting journey.
Head to the show notes for all the resources mentioned on today's episode. And if you loved this podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review.
See you next week. Bye.